Washington, D.C. It got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake media. Look at them. A lot of fake media. NBC is perhaps worse than CNN, I have to tell you. And MSNBC is horrible.
Check it out!
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press, a show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
That sounds awfully harsh. Why can't you be a little more supportive?
Number one! Time is running out!
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
Oh, a microphone.
And a phony at the mic.
Fun lovers and truth seekers, you have come to the right place. It's live and local now for a Thursday. That means Wayne Allen Root will join us just about an hour from now. First, though, we're going to take a look at the economy. We have, really a mixed bag. The Dow is way up today. But 6.6 million additions to the unemployment rolls has a lot of people very concerned. Let's check in with Andy Puzder. You see him on cable news all the time. I see him on cable news all the time. He is the former CEO of CKE Restaurants, senior fellow at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy, and the author of The Capitalist Comeback, The Trump Boom, and the Left's Plot to Stop It. He joins us. Andy, first of all, you're joining us from one of my favorite cities, a place where I cut my teeth in radio, Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to Live and Local Now. Good to have you on, man.
All right. It's a pleasure to be here, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
What do you make of the unemployment numbers?
Well, they were down some from last week, but they're still incredibly high. And I think it's embarrassing that this morning the Senate killed Mitch McConnell's effort to add $250 billion to this loan program for small businesses, which would have made almost double the money, I guess, available to small businesses to keep people employed. And I'm always astounded by the level of politicizing that the Democrats are willing to reach for in Washington, D.C. to, you know, achieve their progressive ends. We've got a real crisis in this country. They should be reacting like we have a crisis and put the politics aside.
Well, as an example, I'm still waiting for my $1,200 check because Nancy Pelosi ended up stalling and holding out for the new Green Deal and different things like that. Can you talk, should there be a political price to pay for somebody like Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or whoever it is that stopped this thing today?
Yeah, I sure hope they lose the House of Representatives in the next election. I think what they've done, what Pelosi's done, what the Democrats have done since they took over the House is embarrassing. They spend more time trying to impeach the president, trying to impede aid going out during this pandemic crisis than they have. What have they accomplished otherwise? They approved the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement. I mean, that was a Trump agreement that they should have approved months before they approved it, and they're trying to hang that. They're trying to hang their hat on that as something that they got done in this Congress. They've got nothing done. They went in there with the intention of destroying the Trump presidency, not helping the country. They failed at destroying the Trump presidency, but they've been very successful at not helping the country.
Andy Puzder joining us. Let me just ask you, the economic crisis, there is a perception out there that I keep seeing on cable news that because we artificially stopped the economy, we told people to go home, to leave their jobs, that once we get the economy going again, once we reopen America, as we like to call it, that all of a sudden the jobs will come back, people will be out buying things, people will have money in their pockets. Is that necessarily true?
Nobody knows. This reminds me of the scene in the movie Apollo 13, where they had to shut down. They had to shut down all the systems in the space capsule and reboot them to get things working again. They shut them off, and nobody knew if it would restart. You know, there's no guarantees on restarting if nobody's ever shut down an economy like ours before. I believe that the economy will restart because of the potential of entrepreneurial Americans working in a free market economy. If the government gets out of the way, if we don't do what we did after the Great Recession, what Obama did, and implement a lot of big government policies, increase taxes, materially increase the regulatory burdens on businesses, if we do the kinds of things that encourage businesses to hire and workers to work and investors to invest, we will see the economy come roaring back. If we do the kinds of things Obama did, which discouraged business growth, so businesses didn't hire, wages didn't go up, investors didn't invest. If we do that, if we adopt those policies, I don't know if we'll ever come out of this. So this next election is extremely, extremely important. This president needs our support. We need to get back to the policies he had in place before the virus hit. Before the virus hit, we had the strongest labor market in modern history. More people working, low unemployment rates, tremendous job openings, wages rising like they hadn't risen in a decade for 20 straight months, over 3% a month. It was a great economy. We need to get back to it. The problem here wasn't an economic problem. It was solely the pandemic and the shutdown. We can get back to an accelerated economy if we don't, if we can keep our elected representatives from resisting the temptation to follow big government programs.
Again, Andy Puster joining us, the former CEO of CKE Restaurants, senior fellow at Pepperdine University's School of Public Policy, and the author of The Capitalist Comeback, The Trump Boom, and The Left's Plot to Stop It. Can we reopen America beginning on or about April 30th? Is that realistic, unrealistic? What do you make of it?
I think there's a good possibility that we can, that look, the number of deaths from this are much, much lower than they were projected to be. It isn't spreading like people thought it would spread. One of the reasons, I was listening to one of the medical experts this morning. I was on a conference call with a number of people, and he was saying that, and I hope I don't screw this name up, hydroxychloroquine.
You nailed it.
But it's really having a big effect on the number of deaths and reducing, how virulent this disease is. If we can start seeing some progress in those areas, if we can start to see this thing level off so we know that the hospital system's not going to be overwhelmed, we should be able to reopen the economy. Now, will people feel comfortable going out? Some will. I think younger people are anxious to get out. Some people shouldn't. Elderly people or people with medical conditions should continue to quarantine themselves until we come up with a vaccine or a very effective therapeutic. But look, it's possible this could all happen by April 30th. Nobody thought that. I think Trump's going to end up looking a genius out of this because with his promoting hydroxychloroquine and saving a lot of lives, even though if Joe Biden had proposed it, it would be the biggest thing in the news media right now. It'd be on the front page of the Times and the Post and the LA Times and everywhere else. But since Trump said this thing might work, the media has come out against it. But it looks like it is working, and I think we're going to see real good results over the next few weeks.
Andy, there's so much money floating around. SBA's got money. The Treasury Department's got money. Everybody's got money, and they're trying to force it down our throats. My question is, will it fuel economic confidence on the part of small business?
Well, right now the problem is small businesses are having a hard time getting the money. The money's out there. The money's available. Some of the banks are being very difficult about whether or not they'll lend the money. Some feel that the margins on this aren't sufficient to justify their taking the risks. There's some concern about making these loans and then trying to collect them. And what's the government going to say? The government was so critical of our financial institutions after the Great Recession. You'd hate to see, what if we get a President Elizabeth Warren or President Bernie Sanders or Alexandria or Ocasio-Cortez? The banks that make these loans, are they going to be criticized? So they're nervous about it. But there is a lot of money out there. If we can get it into the hands of small businesses, it should help. It's good for people to keep in mind this isn't stimulus. This isn't something that's being put into the economy to try and generate economic growth. It's more like think of a bathtub. It's more like a stopper. It's something you want to do to keep the water in. This is about survival. It's not a faucet. We're not trying to pour money into the economy to generate economic growth. That has to come from the private sector. But this is important. The qualification on getting loan forgiveness is that you keep your employees on the payroll. I think that's extremely important and a major factor in getting us through this. So I think this is a good, given the circumstances we're under, where we had to shut the economy down, it made sense to do it. We're going to have to get it back up. In the interim, will we keep the economy alive? Will we keep businesses alive? This is about the best the government can do, I think, in that respect. So I feel good about the program. I just hope we can effectively get those dollars into the hands of the businesses that need the dollars.
Andy, here in Nevada, we have closed down restaurants and bars and casinos and the Strip. And I don't know when it will come back. You have some experience in that particular world. How difficult, and again, they're closed to anything but carry out or curbside. My question is, how easy or how difficult will it be to bring that industry back? That's so vital. It provides so many jobs in our area.
Let me say, first of all, with respect to the restaurant industry in particular, that this has not been as devastating as it would have been 5 or 10 years ago before everybody had third-party delivery. Back 5 or 10 years ago, the only restaurants that would have survived this would have been the, you know, pizza and the Chinese places that deliver. If you're lucky, there's a Mexican place that delivers in your area. Now everybody delivers. So delivery's gone way up. It's been a boost to the restaurant industry. They're not doing as well as they were doing before the crisis, but they're doing better than they would have been doing. I think that will continue when this crisis ends. I think everybody's going to have to adjust to the fact that now people have been accustomed to, you know, sitting in their living rooms watching the latest movies in the comfort of their own home, not having to go to a theater, and getting food brought to the front door very conveniently. Things are going to change. The way we consumers deal with all businesses will be different when this ends. As far as restaurants, I think we can do things to get them back online quickly. We've got to separate seating in dining rooms, and there should be more room in dining rooms with people ordering third party, so you should be able to do social distancing. Anything we can do to make people feel comfortable about the experience is going to be helpful. We need to encourage people to get out. As I said, I think young people will get out fairly quickly, and by that, now that I'll be 70 in July, I guess I'm thinking anybody under 50 is young. But people under 50, you know, there isn't a huge risk to them. There is some risk. I don't want to downplay it. But there isn't a huge risk for young people. This is basically a disease that impacts older people who have other health conditions. And those people should continue to quarantine themselves even until we find a vaccine. But in the interim, I think we can get things rolling. It depends upon how comfortable people are, how effective the therapeutics are when we come up with a vaccine. But I think people are anxious to. I'm anxious to get back to a good restaurant, sit down and have a good steak dinner at one of the places there in Vegas by you off the Strip, one of my favorite restaurants. But we're gonna have to wait and see. Hopefully we'll get back quickly. I think we'll get back quickly, but nobody knows. We've never done this before.
Andy, in our final minute, tell me about the book.
I wrote it in 2017. It came out in 2018. It's describing how Trump would be able to revive the economy and the historical precedents, what's gone on historically in this country, why his policies would work, why socialism never works, doesn't work, and wouldn't work, and why progressives would try and stop Trump from being successful. And I tell you, it's as current today as the day I wrote it. It goes through exactly what's happened. They've done exactly what I predicted they would do. The economy did exactly what I had predicted it would do prior to coronavirus hitting our shores. But it's a good history lesson, and it's a good current events lesson. I think people who've read it, the comment that I get mostly is they should distribute this in every high school and use it as part of a history course. And I wish they would, and I hope people will read it and get a better understanding of our history, particularly young people who really aren't being taught American history in school anymore. They're being taught a form of anti-American history, and they don't get any economics or civics. So I think it's a good book if you have a son, a daughter, a granddaughter, a grandson, and you'd like to make sure that they learn a little more about why our country is great and why it works, I'd encourage you to get the book.
Is it available Amazon, better bookstores everywhere? If bookstores are even
Amazon,
open.
Bookstores, well, Amazon right now is probably the best place to get everything. So I'll encourage people to go on Amazon. It is available. The paperback is called The Trump Boom. I don't know why they changed it from The Capitalist Comeback to The Trump Boom. I think they thought it would sell more books if we gave it a new name. But there is a hard copy, The Capitalist Comeback, and paperback, The Trump Boom. And if you go in under my name, Puzder, P-U-Z-D-E-R, you can, on Amazon, they will both pop up.
Andy, it's great to meet you. Hopefully we'll get a chance to meet somewhere down the road. Enjoy the rest of your day in the beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Andy Puzder, the former CEO of CKE Restaurants, joining us. The book, The Capitalist Comeback, The Trump Boom, and the Left's Plot to Stop It. Stick around. More to do as we continue live and local now.
Hi, this is Diamond and Silk. If you can see mountains in Nevada, listen to Kevin Wall on the Nevada Talk Network.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. Are you in need of a healthcare program? Well, you're in luck. As a member of Liberty HealthShare, you're part of a community that comes together to share their medical expenses. You can sign up throughout the year with memberships starting as early as the following month. And there are no contracts or commitments. Programs start as low as $199 per month, and there's no network. So you can choose your own doctors and hospitals. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit ministry, not insurance. So your money goes towards helping other members with their eligible medical expenses. And in your time of need, other members are there for you. You can feel good knowing that you're part of a community of like-minded individuals who understand the importance of people coming together to bear one another's burdens. To find out more, call 855-58-LIBERTY. That's 855-58-LIBERTY. Or go to libertyhealthshare.org/Kevin Wall. That's libertyhealthshare.org/Kevin Wall.
We encourage you to participate in the gift card challenge.
These days, we all probably know of a local business that is struggling to adapt to the current realities. Here's a small way that you can help.
Announcing the gift card challenge.
If you're able, think of your favorite local business and then buy a gift card today.
Buy it online or pledge to buy one as soon as you can.
Every little bit will help.
Restaurants have takeout or delivery. Many businesses have online shopping options.
Participate in the gift card challenge today.
Buy a gift card.
Any amount and show your support for our local businesses in this time of need.
Keep it for yourself to use at a later date or pass it along to someone you know that's on the front lines doing what they can to keep us all safe.
Make the pledge and buy a gift card today.
Participate in the gift card challenge.
Post and tag the business you selected on social media and challenge your friends and neighbors to do the same.
Working together, one card at a time, we can all make a difference.
Hashtag gift card challenge. Learn more at giftcardchallenge.org.
Hello, this is Jared Fisher. I'm a business owner, community thought leader, and a previous candidate for governor. As the owner of Las Vegas Cycery and Escape Adventures, I know the importance of exercise and spending time in the outdoors, and I know the amazing outdoor experiences we have in Nevada. Las Vegas Cycery has kids' bikes, affordable hybrid bikes, mountain bikes, and road bikes. We also have a wide variety of the latest electric bikes, which affords the opportunity for those who want to ride a bike again but have some physical limitations. For more information, visit LasVegasCyclery.com. And for those of you interested in a guided biking or hiking outdoor tour, visit EscapeAdventures.com for gift cards and a one-of-a-kind outdoor adventure. Our phone number is 702-596-2953. We're located at 10575 Discovery Drive at the exit ramp of Town Center and 215. That's 10575 Discovery Drive at the exit ramp of Town Center and 215.
For years now, you've heard me talking about Real Water. Hey, Kevin Wall here. I just can't get over the clean, smooth taste and how great it makes me feel. I won't drink anything else. But there's more than just great taste to Real Water. There's real science behind why it's so good. It's infused with negative ions, which basically means it has a bunch of extra electrons. You see, those negative ions help you hydrate on a cellular level and provide a powerful antioxidant effect. I told my friends Brent and Amy, the owners of Real Water, that I wanted to offer my listeners a special on Real Water, and they agreed. So here's the deal. Go to Amazon and search Real Water. It's the blue rectangular bottle that says Real Water. add it to your cart, and when you proceed to checkout, there'll be a coupon section. Put in 10WALL. That's the number 10WALL, all caps, no spaces, and you'll receive a 10% discount. It doesn't get much better than that. Great tasting real water with all its beneficial properties delivered right to your door. I know you'll love it. Trust me, you will taste and feel this difference.
Let us know what's on your mind. Email NevadaTalkNet@gmail.com or call 775-293-1875.
Stick around. Coming up, we're going to get one of the higher-ups in the Trump administration, Eric Hargan. He is the Trump administration's Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services. We had Alex Azar on a couple of weeks ago, right? Well, we're going to get the second-in-command. Eric Hargan will join us. And we'll talk about the role of HHS in this federal response to the COVID-19. We'll do that and more coming up, live and local now.
Where Nevada comes to talk, making radio great again.
Listening to the radio, driving in your car.
Radio gets results.
Radio is there no matter where you are.
Radio gets results.
When you need to get your message through, people really do listen to.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
As the Labor Department reports, another 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment benefits last week because of the coronavirus outbreak. The Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says things may be tough now, but things will recover quickly.
There is every reason to believe that the economic rebound, when it comes, can be robust. We entered this turbulent period on a strong economic footing, and that should help support the recovery.
Powell was speaking there to a forum in Washington, D.C. this morning. Social distancing may be working in the fight against the outbreak. Health officials say while there are still some ways to go, initial coronavirus task force models had estimated the disease would claim about 200,000 lives in the United States. Now they've lowered their projections from the hundreds of thousands down to the tens of thousands. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS and you cannot afford to make payments to the IRS, you may qualify for the CNC tax program. This is a new program, and if you qualify, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Once you're accepted into this program, the IRS is forced to stop all harassing collection activities. No threatening phone calls, no wage garnishments, no bank levies, and no more monthly payments to the IRS. Get ready to write this number down. It's the most important number you'll ever need to end your IRS tax nightmare. Call Paramount Tax Relief at 800-547-4804 for a free confidential consultation to find out if you qualify for the CNC tax program. Once you are accepted into the CNC tax program, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Call Paramount Tax Relief now at 800-547-4804. That's 800-547-4804. Again, 800-547-4804.
One driver is using this quiet time to prepare for life as a father. I'm Kyle Rickey. That story next on NASCAR Today, Midday.
Hey there, it's Hall of Fame driver Rusty Wallace for Blue Emu. After spending nearly a quarter of a century in a race car, I know what it means to be banged up and bruised up.
As Wallace spins, Wallace...
That's why I reach for Blue Emu products to support my muscles and joints. Blue Emu is known for quality and innovation. And Blue Emu is one of the few muscle and joint brands that is 100% owned, distributed, and manufactured in the USA. For Hall of Fame relief, reach for Blue Emu. Works fast and you won't stink.
It's the Rip the Fence podcast.
3-4, Christopher Bell, a winner at Eldora.
Dylan, it's good to see you, buddy.
It's good to see you, bud. Here. Congrats.
That was probably the most exciting win I've ever had in my career.
With Dylan Welch and Tyler Burnett.
Kyle Larson is a Chili Bowl Midget Nationals champion. When those words come out of my mouth, how does it make you feel?
When it comes out of your mouth, it feels really good because you're the biggest Christopher Bell lover in the media center every week.
Available to download wherever you listen to podcasts and on ripthefence.com.
Daniel Hemric is in his first season with Junior Motorsports, running a part-time schedule in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Hemric and wife Kenzie announced during the offseason that they are expecting their first child in May. Hemric took to the team's Instagram account recently to discuss baby preparations.
Yeah, baby prep is going good. We about got our little girl's room done. I think it's 95%, I'd call it. As far as changing a diaper goes, that's a different deal. I haven't put much practice in because that's a very controlled environment. And everything about this process is very uncontrolled. So we're going to have to wing it, or I'm going to have to wing it. My wife, she's all about it.
For more, visit MRN.com. I'm Kyle Rickey. This is NASCAR Today Midday on the Motor Racing Network.
Let us know what's on your mind. Email NevadaTalkNet@gmail.com or call 775-293-1875.
My name's Joe Biden. I'm a Democratic candidate for the United States Senate. Look me over. If you like what you see, help out. If not, vote for the other guy. Give me a look, though, okay?
Crazy for thinking.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying. And I'm crazy for loving. You.
So good to have you with us. It is Thursday, inching ever closer to the weekend. It is live and local now. About a month ago, and gosh, a month ago seems like a lifetime ago. So much has gone down. We had a chance to visit with Alex Azar, who is the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. And today we get the number two in the department, Eric Hargan. He is the Trump Administration Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services. He joins us from our nation's capital. And, Eric, first of all, thanks for joining us. Within government, tell me how this whole thing is working out for you, for your family. I'm assuming you're under stay-at-home orders. Are you getting to go into the office? Are you working from home? Give me how this is impacting you and your family.
Well, I am actually in the office. You know, our sort of leadership team here at HHS is in the office. We are practicing social distancing guidelines within the office. I actually was just meeting with the secretary, and we were spaced very far around the table, big table in his conference room, to practice social distancing. So instead of all of us kind of sitting in a row, we're sitting like really spaced far apart from each other, or like standing along the edges of the walls to make sure that we practice social distancing. We actually are doing what we are asking everyone to do, but we are here, need to be here at the office in here, except to the extent that most of our employees here at HHS are actually working from home, but except those that are needed for the response and who need to be in position here. With regard to my family, my wife and my kids are at home. My kids are, you know, obviously they're in school, and the school was there in Virginia. We live in Arlington, and they're at home and healthy, thank God, as is my wife. She's being able to work and telework herself, so that's good, and they're all healthy. We'll have to see how long this persists with them in our relatively small apartment. We'll see how they're healthy. We'll see how sane they are at the end of this process, being cooped up in our apartment together for long periods of time. So
that sounds, Eric. Well. Eric, that sounds like everybody. Like we're all going stir crazy. I want to ask you about the role of HHS. I know the vice president has talked a lot about the whole of government approach that is being taken by the Trump administration. Can you talk a little bit about where HHS fits into that?
Yeah, so we're the primary response in terms of a healthcare point of view for this, and we have a number of our constituent agencies that are lead on different parts of this. So, you know, CDC is a primary public health agency. They surveil the disease. They look for where it's in outbreaks. They gather data on it. They provide guidance to people of all different kinds on safe practices that they can have, and they're sort of looking at the data and trawling through that. They're the ones that prepare all these case numbers and figure out where the disease is moving. Then you have NIH, which is National Institutes of Health. They're our researchers, and they're working with, you know, academics and other researchers to look for new therapeutics, new vaccines, and diagnostics. So they're working on clinical trials for things that are coming up. You have FDA, also at HHS, and they work with private industry to try to bring these new products into reality, vaccines and therapeutics, diagnostic tests. They're working with industry directly, with the companies out there to bring those new things to market. And then ASPR, which is our preparedness and response agency, they're the ones who manage the national stockpile. So they work with procuring these supplies and distributing them out with FEMA into the states and ultimately down to the localities and the individual hospitals and other providers. So that's basically like the four agencies that are front and center on this response.
Again, Eric Hargan joining us, Trump administration Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services. Have you had in the last 3 or 4 weeks, have you had turf wars at all? Have you had agencies butting heads jurisdictionally? Or is everybody playing well in the sandbox?
Well, you know, there's always, when you have this huge, there's always sort of places where kind of bureaucratic processes run against each other. That's sort of natural when you have huge enterprises, and really it is a whole of government, whole of America response. So you're talking about being able to use all of these different agencies, all the different departments, whether it's us, Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, you know, all the different functions of the White House, Capitol Hill, and interacting with them on the bills and the resources they're making available, the new authorities they've got, plus 50 states, the territories, the tribal governments, the localities, then all the private industry. Now, if you can imagine trying to manage that enterprise across in a crisis situation, there's always going to be places where there are rough edges and bare patches and things like that. But I would say, having been in the government before, I was here at HHS under President Bush, it has been a fantastic process. There's been a ton of cooperation, a ton of companies, individuals, people in the government, and different governments stepping up patriotically and cooperating with each other in a way that you just really don't get in the normal course of business. People are really working together really, really well. There are always examples of the opposite. That's too bad, but I think Americans are looking for unity, and that's average Americans, every people in their everyday course of living, but it's really turned out to be the people who are leading this response as well.
Maybe you can give me an answer to this. I've asked a few people in government, and nobody has given me a really good answer. The projection models, they keep coming down. We had 240,000 deaths, down to 80, down to 60. Who knows what it'll be by the end of the day today. Can you talk a little bit about those projection models and why we've gone from 240,000 down to about 60,000?
Yeah, you know, I think it's the developing facts on the ground. You know, these models are formulas. You sort of put in facts, and you get out a different set of projections. And as we've seen and again, different models are different, so I'm not going to say, you know, I haven't looked at every single model, so we can't give you any comfort about every model that's out there. But as we move through this crisis and you see the policies that are changing behavior, the policies are changing behavior. The behavior is lowering the numbers of infections, lowering the numbers of cases, lowering the numbers of mortalities. That means that the models that are getting this information in are altering. As you move through it, you see the change in policy, you see the changes in numbers, or you see the changes in numbers and you intuit the changes in the policies are responsible for it. You alter the models and those numbers have been coming down. That is incredibly gratifying. We should all be happy about that. That we started with a relatively high number, and it wasn't irrational to start with that high number. When you saw the outbreak weeks ago, you saw relatively high numbers. And if you had taken that curve and that slope and projected it up, you would have seen a lot of deaths. Now, the success of these policies and everybody doing their part, that curve is, as we say famously, it's starting to flatten. That means that those models are showing lower numbers of deaths projected.
Eric, who is in charge of deploying hospital supplies, gowns, gloves, ventilators, respirators? Who is actually in charge of that? And are we getting the job done? I mean, a lot of the predictions were, oh, we're going to be short this many ventilators. People are going to be dying. Who's in charge of that?
Well, you know, it's America, which is, we're a very decentralized country, which means that it is really, while we are supporting here at the federal government, it's state managed, it's locally executed, but then beyond that, as we say, it's a whole of America approach. Hospitals and individual providers are out there getting equipment for themselves. Their counties and states are supporting that by also trying to get these supplies. The states are getting those supplies, they're getting those from us, and we're out in the market too, buying supplies, getting them to the states to be distributed out by the states. So everybody is working at this, trying to get things and supplies in the right place. You know, as you point out very well, there were initial predictions of these huge gaps in supplies. Well, as we've seen the infections come down, the case projections come down, you see, again, the same thing goes along with that. The need for supplies that are projected come down because you see the cases coming down. So people are starting to get a little more confident in projections of what they need. In fact, we've already seen some states that we had advanced supplies to, like some ventilators, are returning ventilators to us to be redeployed to other states because they see they're not going to need them, which is great news. You know, if you look at where we started here, Dr. Birx pointed out, The United Kingdom, wealthy peer country of ours, had 8,000 ventilators. You applied that ratio to us, we would have had 40,000. We have about five times the population of the United Kingdom. We have 200,000. That was our starting place. We had five times what you could have expected in this country already. Many times it's a matter of where it is and whether a local area or even a local department of one hospital has enough supplies in place at that time. Or one hospital has it. Those were questions that were rising on the ground in the middle of this crisis. But I think we are getting to a state, and you see the fantastic response, magnificent response of private industry to be able to get these supplies generated and manufactured and then out to all of the different providers.
Again, Eric Hargan joining us, Trump Administration Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services. Eric, I'm going to ask you the question that everybody asked me, and I don't have a good answer for it. When will we be able to declare victory? What will victory look like when we do defeat the coronavirus?
Well, you know, the president talks about us, you know, coming back to business as usual. You know, that's that obviously is where we're all aiming. We're aiming to get back to the great economy and the great state of the country that was in place before this new virus hit our country. That's obviously where we're aiming. How we get there is going to be a matter of judgment, not just for the president, but all the local leaders that are going to be having to look at this. You know, the governors and the states, localities are going to have to take a look. We're going to get them as much information as we can for people to make decisions about these shelter-in-place orders and lockdown orders and restrictions on businesses and on social activities that are in place to decide when it's safe, because lives and safety are the paramount importance here. But we all know that we have to get the economy back on track at some point, and that's going to require us to have a lot of discussions, not just at the federal level, but at the state and local level, of when it's to have thoughtful decision and when good judgment can be made about starting to lift these restrictions. I wish I could give you sort of granular level detail on that, but we're looking at a lot of different factors here in terms of developing recommendations.
It's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. The whole of government approach seems to be working. Are you confident that something positive will happen on or about April 30th at this point?
Well, something positive. I think obviously we're seeing things that are positive all along here lately. Not, you know, we're still in the middle of seeing really terrible amounts of cases and mortality still this week, although those are getting better. You can't say to an individual, you know, they're an individual, not a statistic. They're not a number that, you know, belongs in a spreadsheet. You know, so you've got to remain, you know, thinking about the people who are being, you know, ravaged by this illness right now, and losses are being had right now. But beyond that, we are starting to see these curves going down all across the board pretty much at the hot spots. You're starting to see it leveling out and getting better for these communities and getting better for these states relative to what they were at before. And that's a tremendous sign for us. So it is coming down. And as you pointed out, it's coming down pretty rapidly in terms of the projections of where we are. I think we're just going to remain vigilant to watch these numbers continue to go down, to watch these policies continue to succeed. And then we're going to have to make a decision closer to that time. We are in early April. You know, the president had said, you know, we're going to relook at this up through April 30th. But obviously, we're looking at this thing in advance of that. We're not planning on, you know, making a recommendation on April 30th. We're going to be talking about this, and are already talking about whether or not we're seeing justification for making recommendations about loosening these things to our state and local partners.
Eric, final question. Is it frustrating, though, to see the gains in New York, and even Governor Cuomo is talking about these gains, but then you have cities like Detroit, like Baltimore, like D.C. That are having spikes and are becoming new hotspots. Is it frustrating that it's like putting out a fire, at one end of the campground, and all of a sudden another fire ignites? Is it frustrating to you as the deputy at HHS?
Well, of course it is frustrating that we can't kind of address all these things at once. It is, of course. I mean, you would want to see all these places succeeding at the same rate and all these things happening equally across the country, because, you know, however, you have to celebrate the successes that are being had in places that were hotspots and have been able to reduce those downturns. And, you know, seeing those successes there means, just like those states that returned us ventilators and returned us resources, that means you see a success in one place for ourselves as a federal government. That means that we can dedicate our national resources to the remaining hotspots to be able to apply more resources to them. So, you know, in some ways, you know, you got to look at those as successes, sort of a glass half full instead of glass half empty. because it does, you know, to take your example, if New York's coming down, that means maybe we can get some of those resources out of New York at some point when it's safe and send those to other hotspots as they develop, just as other places have dedicated resources to New York.
Eric, thank you so much for joining us. Give our best to the secretary. He was wonderful with us about a month ago before all this craziness happened. Thank you so much for joining us, and be safe there, will you please?
Okay, thank you.
There you have it. Eric Hargan, the Trump administration's Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services. Stick around, more to do as we continue. It is live and local now.
Where Nevada comes to talk, making radio great again. The official radio stations of the Vegas Golden Knights.
I'm Byron Bergeron, and I'm a lawyer. Now, I know that people don't like lawyers, but think of it like this. I'm here to level the playing field so you get a fair shake. Let me give you an example. You get into a wreck. Your insurance company wants you to think it represents you, and its priority is your best interest. You know, good hands. The truth is, its priority is its checkbook and its shareholders. If it's to their advantage, they will throw you under the bus so fast, you'll think the mayhem guy in the TV commercial is driving. I have only one client, you. And I can keep these companies in line because I have only one shareholder to answer to, me. I answer my own phone. I return my own phone calls. And other than my wife and two babies, the most important people in the world are my clients. 775-229-3736. 775-229-3736. When you need the field leveled so you can get a fair shake, call me.
Attention business owners. Are you struggling while waiting for your customers to pay on their net 30, 60, or 90-day invoices? Can't get a business loan? Have no equity? Bad credit? Or maybe no credit at all? Then you need to call AmeriFactors right now. AmeriFactors will give you cash for your invoices and there's nothing to pay back. We simply buy your account receivables, and if those clients don't pay on the invoices, we take the loss. We give you funds based on your account receivables, not your credit. And 98% of all applicants are approved. It's that simple. With AmeriFactors, there's no more waiting for your customers to pay. We give you the funds up front, then we wait for your customers to pay us. Fund your business today. Call AmeriFactors right now.
800-712-8087. 800-712-8087. 800-712-8087. That's 800-712-8087.
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-223-3831. 800-223-3831. 800-223-3831. That's 800-223-3831.
Are payday loans ruining your life? Do you want control over your money again? If you have two or more payday loan cash advances, listen closely. You may be eligible for a program payday loan companies don't want you to know about. A program that may help get aggressive and unfair payday loan companies out of your bank account and get you back on track to financial freedom. Payday loan companies may trap you into paying outrageously high interest rates, and they take way too much of your hard-earned money every week. We understand their tactics and know how to keep them off your back. We'll fight hard to help you regain control of your money. If you have two or more payday loan cash advances, call right now for a free consultation.
800-380-4429. 800-380-4429. 800-380-4429. That's 800-380-4429.
Let us know what's on your mind. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/NevadaTalkNet, or visit our website, nvtalk.com.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, I called him Governor Gloom and Doom, but yesterday at his briefing, he said that the New York plan, this is cut five, the New York game plan is working despite more deaths. How do you explain that? Well, here's the governor himself.
These are stressful, emotional times, as we know. And today is a day in the state of New York with very mixed emotions based on two very different pieces of information we have. I'm trying to work through the mixed emotions for myself, so I'll just present the facts and then we'll go from there. There is good news in what we're seeing, that what we have done and what we are doing is actually working and it's making a difference. We took dramatic actions in this state. We New York Pause program to close down schools, businesses, social distancing, and it's working. It is flattening the curve, and we see that again today. So far, meaning what? Meaning that curve is flattening because we are flattening the curve by what we are doing. If we stop what we are doing, you will see that curve change. That curve is purely a function of what we do day in and day out. But right now it's flattening. The number of patients hospitalized is down. And again, we don't look at just day-to-day data. You look at the three-day trend, but that number is down. The three-day average trend is also down. Anecdotally, the individual hospitals, the larger systems are reporting that some of them are actually releasing more people than are coming in, so they're net down. So we see the quote-unquote flattening of the curve.
I've got great news for you, folks. That, by the way, Governor Andrew Cuomo, I call him Governor Gloom and Doom. Las Vegas police have put a stop to the special haircut program for Las Vegas cops. That is good news. Why should they get haircuts and we can't? Wayne Allen Root, I'll put that question to him as we continue live and local now.